Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can respond to your leads in 15 seconds or less and help you book test drives 24/7, nights and weekends, so you can sell more cars. Podium's AI BDC is a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night and sounds like your best sales rep. Transform potential interest into sales today with Podium. Visit podium.com/daily drive. That's podium.com/daily drive.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/daily drive promo to redeem.
Welcome to Daily Drive for Monday, April 15th, 2024. I'm Jake Neer in Detroit, in for Jamie Butters, who's on assignment.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, Tesla announces job cuts, Stellantis clashes with suppliers, and it threatens to shut down plants and delay vehicle deliveries. And GM is moving its global headquarters. Plus, UAW President Sean Fain talks about this week's vote at VW's plant in Chattanooga and what it means for the future of the union.
I'm confident we'll win. I'm confident the workers are fed up. I'm confident workers in this country are fed up. I think we're going to win a lot.
Part one of our exclusive interview with Sean Fain is coming up in a few minutes. But first, let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Tesla plans to cut more than 10% of its global workforce. That's according to multiple news organizations citing an internal memo. The company told managers to identify critical team members and paused some stock rewards while canceling some employees' annual reviews. The company is also reducing production at its factory in Shanghai, China. According to its latest annual report, Tesla says it has more than 140,000 employees globally as of December 2023. It says the cuts will affect about 15,000 workers. Tesla previously cut 4% of its workforce in New York last February as part of a performance review cycle and before employees were to launch a union campaign. Tesla did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
Meanwhile, Tesla CEO Elon Musk says the company is cutting the price for its full self-driving subscriptions in half in the US and Canada. Tesla is trying to drive adoption of FSD as demand softens and price competition intensifies. The subscription will be priced at $99 a month in the US and $99 Canadian in Canada, which is currently the equivalent of about $72 American. The company previously sold FSD subscriptions for $199 a month. Important note as always, Tesla says the software does not make its vehicles autonomous and requires active driver supervision.
Stellantis is facing plant shutdowns and delayed vehicle deliveries due to suppliers refusing to ship parts in protest over costs. The automaker has taken a hard line toward parts makers. It's seeking inflationary cost relief and rolled out a no more claims policy earlier this year. But some suppliers are biting back. At least two tier one suppliers have stopped shipping parts to the automaker in the past few weeks because of pricing disputes. That's according to lawsuits that the automaker has filed in Oakland County Circuit Court in Michigan. In one case, a judge ordered a supplier of fasteners to continue shipments in late February after its refusal forced Toledo Assembly Complex to shut down. That's where Stellantis builds the Jeep Gladiator, Wrangler, and Wrangler 4xe. In a separate case last week, a different judge denied the automaker's motion to force a manufacturer of gears and pinions to keep shipping. Cutting off the flow of those parts could cause a shutdown at Stellantis plants in Kokomo, Indiana, as soon as today. Those factories build transmissions for the Ram 1500, Wrangler, Grand Cherokee, Charger, Durango, Pacifica, and a dozen other platforms. Those plants were already shut down at the end of March due to the dispute, which resulted in millions of dollars in losses. You can read more at autonews.com.
General Motors is planning to move its downtown Detroit headquarters just a few blocks up the street. GM will relocate to the Hudson's Building, a new 1.5 million square foot project being developed by billionaire Dan Gilbert, chairman of mortgage lender Rocket. The move gives Gilbert an anchor tenant for the office portion of the $1.4 billion building. GM CEO Mary Barra and Gilbert are hosting a press conference at the building at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time Monday, where they are expected to announce the move. Relocating to the new building means GM will leave behind its space at the Renaissance Center office tower, the automaker's longtime headquarters.
And Group One has agreed to buy UK dealership group Inchcape. The all-cash deal rings in at $439 million. Group One expects it to close in the third quarter. The acquisition comes after the retail group's UK business saw losses in the fourth quarter of 2023. It announced plans to reduce its UK headcount by about 10% during its fourth quarter earnings call with investors in January. So far in 2024, Group One has acquired at least 9 dealerships in 3 major deals. They total almost $1 billion in acquired dealership annual revenue. With the acquisition of Inchcape, Group One will have 109 stores in the UK. And those are today's headlines.
Coming up, part one of our exclusive interview with UAW President Sean Fain. That's next on Daily Drive.
Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can help you respond to all your leads in 15 seconds or less, 24/7, nights and weekends. Check out Podium's AI BDC, a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night with human-like communication. Your response time to leads is crucial. With your new AI BDC, you'll engage with leads fast, increasing the chance of selling a car to 45%. Customize your AI BDC to what your dealership needs and start booking more test drives. Sell 10 to 15 more cars per month by connecting quickly with leads over text. Visit podium.com/daily drive. Again, that is podium.com/daily drive.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jake Neer with Kellen Walker. The southern U.S. has been described as American labor's Waterloo, and this week will mark a major development in that battle. Workers at Volkswagen's manufacturing complex in Chattanooga, Tennessee, will cast ballots to decide whether or not it will form a union and join the UAW. Soon, workers at Mercedes plant in Alabama could do the same. With that backdrop, Automotive News staff reporter Michael Martinez spoke with UAW President Sean Fain at the union's headquarters in Detroit. Here's the first part of their conversation.
Sean Fain, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, great. Great to be here. Yeah.
So I want to talk about the organizing efforts. And I guess the first sort of broad question is, you know, folks have described this to me as almost like a perfect storm for you guys. You have the tailwinds from the Detroit 3 contracts and the strike. You have general sentiment for unions rising. Mm-hmm. You're putting space between you guys and the corruption scandal. You have a very friendly White House and NLRB. How do you view this? Is this the union's best opportunity to get some organizing wins?
I think it's the best opportunity in our lifetime. I believe there's always great opportunity, but with the conditions, I view this a lot. I talk to people, I look at my grandparents' generation, coming out of the Great Depression in the 30s and 40s, and when labor exploded at that time. And I think it's a similar situation. We went through a recession a decade ago, and since that recession, corporate profits went through the roof at the expense of working class people. Working class people have been left behind. And so then you throw in a COVID pandemic on top of that. I think that made people reflect a lot about what's important in life. And what's important in life isn't working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. It's not working 2 and 3 jobs just to live paycheck to paycheck and scrape to get by. So I think, it's a culmination of a lot of things, but I do think the times we're in right now, obviously workers are looking for a better way. And it's a fundamental thing. Without a union, you're an employee at will and you have no rights whatsoever. The employer can change the terms and conditions of your employment every day. And you have no control of that. With a union, you have control of that. You have a contract. And so that's, to me, the biggest selling point of why you need a union, why workers need a union. But I do believe, conditions are as favorable as they've been in my lifetime.
I'm wondering on the timing. I've heard a story that, you know, at the end of the strike, once you guys had, were signing the contracts, that you guys noticed some activity picking up on some dormant websites for the transplant automakers, and that's how you knew that there was maybe interest. Can you recount that?
We had workers calling also, but I mean, but you know, it was we had a social media, you know, on our some of our pages, we had a form on our website that was to sign up to join the UAW, and it was from 2017. This form was, but they started showing up, and so naturally, between that, between workers calling with interest, we saw there was obviously a lot more interest than had been happening. And naturally, with the Big Three campaign, they see the UAW doing things differently now. We've really changed, turned the union around, and we're doing things, you know, we're a lot more aggressive. We're how the union should have been for years and hasn't been. And so it's a member-led, member-driven union, and it hasn't been that in my lifetime. And so I just think, you know, again, a lot of those things, people are seeing a difference. Naturally, our Big Three contract campaign and strike, stand-up strike, I think made people reflect on where they are. And our, you know, that strike was a great example. 75% of America stood with us in that strike. And there's a reason why, because union or not, working class people are all living the same reality. So they obviously are starting to see that this is their path forward.
This is a loaded question, and understanding that each organizing drive, each election is unique.
Yeah.
But for so long, the UAW has tried and failed to organize the South. Why do you think that is? Why has it struggled so much?
Well, I mean, I think it's a difference in philosophy. I think it's a difference in leadership styles. I mean, our union's been a top-down structure forever. And, in past drives, I think, you know, a lot of it was led by leadership versus letting the workers lead it. And so one thing we're doing differently, you know, the workers are leading this fight. I mean, they've reached out to us. And, for instance, at the Mercedes location in Vance, Alabama, those workers, literally we're staying out of the way. They took the bull by the horns. They're running with it and they're growing it. We have staff there to support them, but they're leading. And Volkswagen, you know, very similar. The workers, they've tried before. They've been very close. Naturally, they're seeing the difference now in what's going on with the union and in this country. And so they've led this, and we're just supporting them in that fight. And we have majorities of both those places, super majorities. And I do believe we'll have a successful conclusion here real soon.
I've heard at the international level in the organizing department, I've heard before people have half joked that in the past it was almost a punishment that if you got on somebody's bad side, they'd send you to organizing.
Yeah.
What specifically, how have you revamped that department? What sort of personnel changes have you made? What is the strategy there?
Well, you know, this union, you know, unfortunately, it's notoriously in the past, I've seen it. If you piss off your boss, we'll send you in organizing and send you somewhere else and, you know, try to make your life hell. And that's a horrible way to organize. If you load it with people that are, you know, not happy and you're doing it as punishment, I don't think your plan is going to be very effective. You know, look, when I came in as president, I said one thing. You know, I ran on a platform that, you know, I wanted to do things differently, wanted to turn this union around. I want it to be a member-driven, member-led union. And, you know, I took, you know, people that we currently have on staff, but I also brought in people that aren't UAW members, but have a history of working in unions and leading in unions and winning in unions, in organizing, in contract fights, in all those things. And I thought it was imperative to bring people in that haven't been ingrained in the UAW way of doing things the last 40 years in company unionism, basically. And so that we could have, you know, a fresh set of eyes and a fresh set of ideas. And those of us that have been here that don't like the way things were, you know, you combine those things and that's what's led us to where we are. You know, with organizing, you know, I brought in a new lead to head up organizing, and he's done a hell of a job. And we've made some changes in staff, and you know, we're putting people in organizing that are organizers that want to organize, that's their passion. That makes a hell of a difference, also.
And that's Brian Shepard.
Yeah,
he came from the service sector. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
What sort of advantages has he brought to the table?
Just, you know, overall strategies. Look, we're, you know, I'll say this. I've said this before, but we've had a history in this union of complacency, you know, from the leadership on down. And in my opinion, the companies and the leadership were way too close, you know, so that led to complacency among some of the staff and just, you know, coasting. this is a fight. This is a grind. When you're in labor and you're organizing, you're trying to grow a union, there's no room for complacency. Every day, every battle, whether it's contract fights, whether it's trying to organize new workers, whatever it is, changing legislation, you know, fighting, you know, for better, for humanity, you've got to shake things up and you've got to have leaders and staff that are willing to go the extra mile to do that. So we're, you know, we've made some changes, and I do believe, you know, Brian's been an excellent addition, and, you know, we've moved staff around, and we're seeing the results of that already. I mean, think about this. We finished the contract, the Big Three contract, in 100 days. In 100 days, we filed for an election at Volkswagen. It took years before. It took months before to get to that point. And so that, I think, you know, it's proof in the results of all those changes in where we are as a nation, where workers are, and how we're doing things differently in the UAW. All those things, you know, are coming together. And that's the result of it.
Could you go through that 30, 50, 70 strategy? What was the impetus behind that? And did you think specifically with VW that maybe once you got to that supermajority that there would be a recognition? Did you expect that there would be a vote? And do you think there'll have to be a vote everywhere else too?
I think there'll be a vote because the companies aren't changing. I mean, let's be real. The companies, they break the law every day. You know, they have captive audience meetings. They threaten employees. They tell them they're going to close plants. They fire employees. We've seen that at Mercedes in the last week. You know, we had to file more ULPs. And it's a reality. That's what's wrong with this country. That's what's wrong with this world. Working class people and the poor and citizens are generally held accountable for anything we do. But when it comes to the corporate class and the billionaire class, the laws don't apply to them. And that needs to change. We got the supermajority at Volkswagen, but Volkswagen's still been, you know, breaking the law, violating, you know, threatening workers. And, you know, Mercedes, as I said, have recently just fired a few workers. And all those things are done for one reason. They want workers to be afraid. It's done out of fear. They want to make workers afraid of having some control of their lives, because the way it is now without a union, the company has all the control. And that's what this is all about. So that's what we're out to change. And these workers are realizing that now. And I believe that's why it'll be different. These companies have promised them things in the past, but they see things go backwards. I think they're wise to that now. And they realize their only path forward is by organizing and getting control of their work lives.
Talking specifically about VW, kind of expressed it already, but how confident are you in that vote? And what is the biggest hurdle? What will be the biggest challenge to getting that
victory? I'm confident we'll win. I'm confident the workers are fed up. I'm confident workers in this country are fed up. I think we're going to win a lot, but I do believe we're going to win the Volkswagen election. And, you know, the biggest hurdle to me is just, as I just said, I mean, you know, the companies are going to, you know, and outside groups and, you know, politicians, they're, you know, they pull out all the stops because they don't want working class people to have any control of their lives. They don't want working class people to have any power. They want to keep things as it is. They want to keep the order as it is, where the people at the top have all the power and all the control, and everyone else is left fending for themselves. And so that's, to me, the biggest obstacle. But I think we're going to see that change. And I think once we see the first domino fall, you're going to see a lot more follow.
A question with VW on works councils. Obviously, that was a big part of things in 2014, The thought that you unionize and you can set up a works council. Do you anticipate, if you're victorious there, that you would set up a local works council? And what would that power dynamic be?
You know, we'll have to see. You know, the works councils in Germany and places work for them because they have law. They have laws that, you know, stipulate these things. They have laws that are favorable for working class people. Unlike America, our political system's been sold out and hoarded out thanks to legislation like Citizens United, rulings like Citizens United, where, you know, corporations and the wealthy can give unlimited amounts of cash to politicians. And you know, they call it free speech, but let's call it what it is. It's extortion, you know, and they get laws put in place that don't favor working class people. I mean, they don't have that situation in Germany where they have works councils. I don't know that that system will work here. At the end of the day, I call it, like here in America, I call that company unionism. I don't have any interest in sitting on corporate boards because me as a president of a union, as one board seat, and there's whatever, 15 or 20 board members that are all corporate people, am I really going to affect change on that board? They don't give a damn about working class people and our issues. They care about one thing, profit and corporate greed. So I think the workers have to make a lot of decisions in how we go forward, but I believe they'll follow the same path that we're on, you know, with Big Three and other auto, and I think they'll have a lot of success with that.
If you win the vote, how quickly will you push for a contract?
I mean, we go to work immediately. I mean, we always will. I mean, that's and that's the next part of this. I mean, a lot of people, you know, in this country, we focus so much on the election, but, you know, the election is just the first step. We've seen it over and over in this country where workers vote to organize and form a union. The workers spend years trying to get a first contract, and the companies just delay and draw it out and frustrate workers and hope that they, you know, kill the will for them to want to stay the course and get that. So we're going to push immediately to get to a first contract, and we're going to fight like hell and do whatever we have to do to make it happen.
Is there anything you can do to push back if they try to delay and string things out?
I don't want to get, like, we have things mapped out. We have strategies in place and we have plans in place, but I don't really want to get into all that because we just have to see how things proceed. And, you know, how the companies act will dictate how we act. And I said the same thing in Big Three bargaining. I mean, we didn't want to strike, but that was up to the companies whether we had to or not. And unfortunately, they didn't want to heed our warnings and heed our advice. And when they put us to the test, we did what we had to do. And we'll do the same thing when it comes to first contracts.
Come back tomorrow for part two of Michael Martinez's exclusive interview with UAW President Sean Fain. They'll talk about efforts to organize other automakers and what comes next after the vote in Chattanooga this week.
And I think once we win at Volkswagen, April 19th, I believe you're going to see a lot more follow in a quick way.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jake Neer, in for Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to our own Paige Hodder for her reporting for today's podcast. We also had reporting from Kurt Nagel of our sibling publication, Crane's Detroit Business. You can get the latest news on UAW organizing, Tesla's cost-cutting efforts, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoyed the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.